Welcome to Leading the Next Generation with Tim Elmore, where our mission is to empower the emerging generations with skills to lead in real life. Welcome back, podcast listeners. Andrew here, and with me, of course, is Dr. Tim Elmore. How are you, Tim?
I'm well. I'm glad to be with Andrew today.
Yes. Yeah, well, I'm glad to be with you, man. I feel like we have so many great conversations on this podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
We have great conversations even when the microphones aren't on,
At least we think so.
At least we think so. That's right. But today, I feel like we're having one of those where it's just the time is nigh. This is such an important subject, and it's really not just about leading the next generation, though it certainly is.
Yeah.
It's about leadership of all kinds. It's something for everybody, and that is about loss.
That's right. Well, listeners, I just want to encourage you. I don't know if you're in the car, at home, or wherever you are, but I want you to really pay close attention. And if you're able, grab a pen or pencil. We're going to talk about something that I have been mulling over, and Andrew, you and I both have.
Yeah.
And it's just the art, really, of handling loss when it happens in your life. And we all have done that.
Yeah, adults struggle with it every single day. But how do you do that, or how do you help a young person do that when they are ill-equipped in terms of biology, right?
Right.
Or at least less equipped than an adult is to be able to navigate, process, and even handle some of those situations. We all go through loss of various kinds, from small things like I lost my favorite toy as a child to really big things like we've lost a person or some other really great difficulty. And so it's a tough and deep subject to dig into, but one I think is vital for us.
I do too. So even though this is for all ages, Andrew, I think one of my favorite illustrations of all time was from a teenager, and it was about a decade or so ago. Do you remember October 2012, when in the news we began to hear about this young girl named Malala, who later went on to win a Nobel Peace Prize?
Yeah.
But if you remember her story, it was remarkable. She grew up in Pakistan, and she was in a place where girls, at least in that country, didn't have access to education. Fortunately, her father was an educator, and he started a school where girls and boys, or boys and girls, were free to go. Well, the Taliban, which was very prevalent in those days especially, did not like schools that allowed girls. And so Malala, even as a teen, became an activist for education reform and allowing girls to, you know, go to school. But it all came to a head in the fall of 2012. Malala had made a speech about how girls, you know, should be allowed to be educated when a Taliban member, actually a few Taliban members, boarded the bus, the van that she was on with a bunch of other students. And one of the Taliban members had a gun, and he asked if Malala was on the bus. Well, nobody meant to give her away, but all of her friends looked over at her, and that kind of gave it away. And she was shot. Almost point blank. It was like maybe 20, 30 feet away. And she was shot in the head, and it grazed her shoulder, and she was out.
Mm-hmm.
Well, as the story unfolded, and I won't give all the details, everybody thought, she's not going to make it. I mean, shot in the head. Who lives?
Yeah.
But she did make it. And then they thought, well, she's certainly not going to be able to. She's going to be a vegetable.
She's not going to be herself. Yeah.
That's right. And then she was. And then they said, well, she certainly won't go back to education reform. And she did.
Yeah.
In fact, one of my favorite quotes, I have it right here. And by the way, listeners, this is from our latest book, from Growing Leaders.
Yeah.
A book called I Can't Wait that's filled with stories of kids who changed the world. So Malala's, her speech was, I love this. This is bold. How dare the Taliban take away my basic right to education?
Wow.
Talk about in your face.
Yeah.
But after the gunshot wounds and her recovery, she said, the terrorists thought that they would change our aims and stop our ambitions. But nothing changed in my life except this. Weakness, fear, and hopelessness died. Strength, power, and courage were born.
Wow.
That's from a teenager.
Wow.
And after that, of course, lots of reform began to take place. And at her 16th birthday, 2013, she made a speech before United Nations and went on to win a Nobel Peace Prize. Now, I share that story because, one, it's inspirational, but two, don't we love stories like that?
Yeah.
The whole idea of victim to victor.
Yes.
Rags to riches. Yeah. Disadvantage to advantage. And I believe there's a way we can actually live this way, even if we're not in a traumatic situation like the Taliban.
Yeah.
We can all live this way in our small things and our big things, small hardships, big hardships.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to talk about today.
And those stories are so profoundly effective because I think all of us have this underlying belief, especially when we experience loss, that I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it on the other side of this thing.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So lots of people would have looked at a story like Malala and go, how is she ever going to be herself or achieve her dreams or whatever it is?
She's lucky to be alive.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Right. But when we see stories of people who don't believe that way, it's a totally different thing. You know, one of our speakers, Tim, who you and I have known for many, many years now, Timothy Alexander, he goes by TA. He and I have traveled the country and spoken together. I know you've gotten to speak alongside of him. This is a young man. I say young man. He's my same age, but he is a remarkable leader who got in a car accident when he was in high school. He's been in a wheelchair ever since, dealt with his own depression and anxiety all of those things, but now goes around and tells a story about how he is almost grateful for what happened to him because of the person it made him into, somebody who is joyful and resilient and all of those kinds of things. So I'll never forget a couple of years ago, he and I were speaking together on a stage. He's, of course, telling his story. And we left there, went straight to the airport, and he grabs me while we're in the airport and goes, look what this kid just DM'd me on social media.
Yeah.
You know, he'd given out his social media handle. And it turns out there was a kid in the audience that day who had come up and said hi, and he was letting TA, both of us, know that he himself had been contemplating suicide.
Wow.
And he said, listening to your story, I realized that all the things I thought were going to end my life are not going to end my life.
Wow.
And all of a sudden, I'm seeing things differently. And to me, it was such a very clear picture of exactly what you're talking about. When we experience that moment of clarity and go, what I think of as insurmountable isn't insurmountable.
Yeah.
It changes things for us.
Yeah, it certainly does. Getting ready for this conversation, listeners, I started thinking about my own life. I don't think I've had a bad life. I think when I look back, I feel like I can count more gains than losses.
Mm.
But I also then wonder if my memory is reconstructed. You know, we talk about this, how
we
don't remember everything accurately.
Yeah.
And I have tended to be such a positive, optimistic, glasses half full, got that from my mother, that I started writing down what has happened that was a loss. Well, it was a pretty big list.
Yeah,
so,
as it turns
not
out.
A bad life, but I have been a type 1 diabetic now for over 40 years. I was diagnosed with this chronic disease in 1980. But I tell you what, I look at my diabetes today, I am so thankful that it made me way more disciplined than I might have been without it.
Yeah.
Am I glad to be a diabetic? Not really, but I'm grateful for what it produced. Discipline and even a sense of urgency. I remember at Growing Leaders early in our history, like 3 years into we were still a small nonprofit. We had a payroll company that we had contracted, and they embezzled $30,000. Now, I don't know if anybody would call that petty cash, but that was certainly not petty cash 3 years into our tenure. I've said this before in this podcast, but when I was 30 years old, I was in a small plane crash. I'll never forget that. But when I look back on what it did to me, it was good. It enabled me to be really clear on managing my time and managing the mission, the calling that I felt like I had. We had an illegitimate lawsuit filed against Growing Leaders, but that forced us to practice better systems for hiring and firing. I remember serving on the streets, serving homeless and disadvantaged populations. I had a knife held to my throat, and that was not a fun night.
I bet
but
not.
When I look back on that, I see the benefits. It really helped me determine my priorities. It didn't make me stop going downtown, but I had a clear sense of priority. And then I remember our first year at Growing Leaders. We had $10,000 worth of products stolen. Mm. It was we sent off the books, and it was a bad credit card, and it was on purpose. We found out later, but it made us handle our inventory a little bit better.
Yeah.
So you can call me Pollyanna if you will. You can shout it out right now, listeners. But I'm telling you, if we can train ourselves to respond, not in denial, but in what was gained. So we want to talk today about three mindsets that we have a choice to make. And I'd like to really encourage you to consider making the right choice. We can determine what we see because we can choose what we look at. Mm-hmm. I want to say that again.
Yeah, please do.
We can determine what we see because we can choose what we look at. I want to ask your response to this, Andrew, because I don't think we've talked a lot about it. I was talking to my friend Randy Hain, who said to me, I think sometimes we think we're reflecting on something and we're really ruminating on it. You know the difference.
Yeah.
So when we ruminate instead of reflect, ruminating is kind of undisciplined recall.
Yes.
I'm just stewing on that. And we say things like, dadgummit, if I had that moment over again, I'd tell him what I think, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
But ruminating is usually not helpful.
Yeah.
We don't sleep well at night. We have imaginary conversations with that person in our head, don't
we?
And so I have tried to train myself, especially with those losses, to say, all right, what did I gain? What I want to reflect, not ruminate, reflect.
Yeah.
So listeners, think about that. Think about stuff you faced that was a loss. Are you ruminating on it or are you reflecting on it?
That's good. That's good. It actually reminds me of a statement that you have made many times. It's associated with one of our habitudes, which is where we talk about leading from either relief or belief, right?
Yeah.
And this is the same mental state, but doing it for other people. But relief is I am acting out of the relief of my own emotions. Belief is I'm acting out of belief in we're working towards or the person I'm working towards. It feels like it's a similar thing here, ruminating versus reflecting, right?
Yeah.
Ruminating is really trying to address or sit in my own emotions over and over and over. I feel angry and I'd like to feed that anger, you know?
Yeah.
Whereas reflecting is me going, okay, I'm angry. I'm experiencing anger. What do I do about it?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is true emotional health when we talk about it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Arthur Brooks in his great writings up at Harvard talks about choosing your emotions.
Yeah.
You don't deny them.
Yeah.
But you can redirect them.
Yes.
And nervousness can be excitement, you know, or something like that.
Yeah.
So let's jump into the meat and potatoes, what we want to talk about.
Let's do it.
Listeners, I'd like to talk about three options that we all have when we face a loss. Well, that's the subject. It could be hardship, setback, you name it. So option number one, and I think we all have done this to a degree, and we all know people that have done this, that loss can define you.
Mm.
It can define you.
Yeah.
For millions, this is their default mechanism. They suffer a tragic loss, either a loss of a job or a family member or an investment or a spouse, a promotion, you name it. And this loss begins to define how they see themselves, who they are. Their self-image morphs based on what's been taken away.
Mm-hmm.
I think about student athletes that we work with at several major D1 programs that the injury now defines who they are. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to play soccer your whole life, Bob, you know? Well, probably wasn't Bob, but that's our point. We allow our sense of identity to morph because of the loss. And you know what happens next? We begin to suffer imposter syndrome.
Yes.
Now I'm no longer good at that, or I don't have that anymore. Maybe I'm not who I thought I was.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't deserve that job when I was fired. After all.
Yep.
Oh my gosh, that's horrible. So, listeners, I want you to be thinking, not ruminating, but thinking about what we're talking about here. Our whole sense of identity can plummet, and it's confirmed over and over and over. You know,
you start looking for it everywhere, and you start finding it everywhere.
Yep, what you focus on expands.
Yeah.
We've said that forever. So, I want to share something with you that I don't know if I've ever shared with you, Andrew, but here it is. I'm in public. Here we go. When I was in high school, I had three different jobs, and I did good at two of them, not the third.
Okay,
I was fired.
Oh.
It was a switchboard job, which even now you probably think, why the heck did they put you on a switchboard, Elmore? But they did. They thought, oh my gosh, he's good with people, his voice is nice, blah, blah, blah. Well, I was not good at the switchboard.
You might need to even define what a switchboard is.
That's true.
At least I don't think I've ever seen one except in a museum, personally.
Yes, you're.
I'm not trying to age you or anything.
And I promise I won't call you a young whippersnapper either. A switchboard, for all of you youngins out there, was a panel of holes where you plugged in, this call came in, it needs to be sent over to, you know, this office or this person. So anyway, I was working the switchboards, or at least I attempted to work. Within 3 weeks, it was very obvious this was not my gift. So I was fired. Well, you can imagine that threw me for a few days. One, I was so embarrassed to tell my dad, why aren't you going to work? No reason, you know, and that I had
they
to
asked
say.
Asked me not to come back. Yeah.
That's right. They said, do not come back into the building. Don't call us. We'll call you. Yeah. It was one of those things. But after a few days, it really did hurt me. I mean, it hurt my feelings. It affected my self-image. But then I realized it really was an issue of gift, not personal value.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said a lot recently, we all just need to be positioned well. Jim Collins talked about getting the right people on the bus,
yeah.
and he gave them in the right seats.
Yes.
So, Andrew, we cannot expect Stevie Wonder to catch a Frisbee.
Yeah.
You know, if you throw a Frisbee, you're going to think, that guy's horrible.
Yeah.
Well, at Frisbee, but put him on a keyboard, ask him to write a song and perform a song.
Yeah.
He's a genius.
Yeah.
Same guy. So I had to remember my value was still high.
Yeah.
And I just need to not do that job. I'm not going to bless them. I'm not going to bless me. So I think it's just important that we remember this. So the anecdote for this particular option, the loss define me, is something we know deep down, but we forget when we get in an emotional state.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is. We must never place our sense of identity in something that can be taken away.
Mm.
We must never put our sense of identity into something that can be taken away. Athletes, as I mentioned earlier, suffer when they place their entire sense of self on their sport, and then they age out or they have an injury that eliminates them. Our talent, our looks, our income should not define who we believe we are, because we're going to lose our looks.
Yeah.
Just look at me. That was a joke.
Okay. Luckily, they can't see you.
That's right. Exactly. That's right. I just feel like the healthiest people choose something internal and, can I say, eternal. That faith plays a role in their life,
yeah.
To define them. So what's inside you and what's before you are more important than what's behind you.
That last point is a really interesting one. Would you say that if a sense of loss becomes defining for you, that might be an indication that you were letting that define you yeah. before you experienced that loss?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
It's almost like a report card is forced. It's a final exam coming
yeah.
abruptly.
Yeah.
And my report card does not look good. What have I not done in preparation to respond well to these
yeah.
losses?
So how well we handle the transition into yeah. a new reality is an indicator of
yeah.
how much we had made that a part of our identity.
So
I know
true.
I've talked to many parents about, I'm not a parent of a child currently, but talked to parents of children going, as my kids age through the life stages, especially the one where they go off and become an adult themselves, that there's a sense of loss there that
yeah.
reveals to them, I might have been putting a little too much of my identity into my child, mm-hmm. and I'm not allowing them to be their own person
yeah.
in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So it feels like it's similar to that idea.
It is, and it's not even fair to that adult child. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so that's option one.
Let's get to number two.
We need to be
yeah.
careful that we don't let it define us. The second option is a little bit better, but it's still not healthy. We can let our losses confine us.
Mm.
So we all know what confine means. We're now limited. So this response is common, slightly better, as I mentioned. Many people suffer a loss and they allow yesterday to confine what they imagine for tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still good self-esteem, good self-image. I look in the mirror and I like me, but I'm limited now.
Yeah.
What happened now has I've got boundaries on my talent or what I think could happen,
yep.
the kind of promotions I get at work.
Yep.
Maybe I don't deserve that anymore,
yep.
that sort of thing. So an experience tends to mold and restrict us from the freedom to envision significant success. Now, let me make a statement I want you to listen to and maybe even just ponder. When a loss defines us, it diminishes our sense of identity. So when a loss confines us, it diminishes our sense of capacity. You see the difference?
Yeah.
So one is completely affects our identity. This one, my identity is still intact, but now my capacity, I don't see myself as doing anything really great.
Yeah.
This
reminds me of when people talk about the difference between a failed entrepreneur and a successful entrepreneur
yeah.
is how well they handle failure.
That's
right?
really true.
Because when somebody tries something new, they are inevitably going to experience some degree
yeah.
of failure. There is no entrepreneur who has not
yeah.
experienced failure.
Yeah.
And there are some people who go, oh, I guess I'm just not a good entrepreneur.
Yeah.
And there are other ones who go, I think I just found a way not to do this idea that I have.
Yeah.
Now I got to go find the right
way.
You know?
That's right.
And it's the people who let it confine them based on different from the people who do not.
No, absolutely. That's exactly right, at least in my opinion. You reminded me as you were talking about a story. Little League baseball game's going on. And team comes into the dugout after an inning, and they're behind 37-0.
That's not good.
No, not good at all. But the bystanders looking at the team, the boys are laughing and cutting up and smiling. And so he kind of talks through the screen fence and says, "You guys are behind 37-0, right? I mean, that's you, right?" "Yeah." Well, you're not sad, you're happy." He goes, "Yeah, we haven't been to bat yet. So we haven't had a chance to score 38 runs
Just
yet.
Wait."
But see, that's how we ought to look at life.
Yeah.
I'm not going to let this confine me.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't pitch too well that first inning, but, you know, it's still coming. So we might, when we let it confine us, we might remain emotionally healthy people, but we settle for less. Mm-hmm. That's why I don't like it.
Yeah.
We just settle. Job-wise, spouse-wise, if you're not married, you just say, "I don't deserve any more." We're limited and hampered more than we were in the past before this loss. We tell others we become more realistic, but really we're pessimistic now. It's a cop-out. So anyway, the anecdote for this, in my opinion, is to reflect on our best days, not our worst ones.
That's good.
I have a tendency, if I'm not careful, to look at my worst days. I go to bed, I'm worried about what didn't happen or what could happen, and I'm not disciplining my mind. After a loss, I spend time thinking about my most significant accomplishments on purpose. And that, in other words, this is how I climb out of it. I read thank you notes. I've got a box of thank you notes,
I
read through them. And that's helpful because some of them I forgot. I even affirm out loud what I know to be true about myself, meaning the longer history of Tim Elmore, if I've had a bad day, is not that bad day, but it's something else. If we fail to handle losses well, like I'm describing right now, we'll eventually go to our graves with loads of potential still inside. It was just limited. It was confined. Never, listeners, let your yesterday keep you from your tomorrow. Learn from it, but don't live with it. I remember when I was in college, Andrew, the dean and a team of staff at this university were auditioning performers and speakers to do kind of like service trips.
Cool.
Where we would get in a van and travel around. Sometimes they were musicians. Sometimes they had a speaker and then a service team. Well, I was trying out for a speaker role. I thought, this would be awesome. They're going to love me. Well, I put together what I thought was a pretty strong outline, and I delivered it pretty well, I thought. But imagine my shock when I was not chosen. And so immediately I go, oh, my gosh. And then I looked at the people that were chosen. I thought, well, maybe they are better than me.
Mm-hmm.
They're a great hire. You know, they're juniors, not sophomores or whatever. And I just had a slump for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But then I began to think through, wait a minute. This should push me to make it next year. So it pushed me to improve and not ride on my natural ability, but to, you know, prepare better, work harder, you know, that sort of thing. So by the next year, I was speaking on a regular basis. You know my career. I was speaking on a regular basis, speaking, teaching. By 1984, I was being asked to travel and speak. So that's, what, 40 years ago? And then over time, I began speaking at arena events. But that all started with that no that pushed me rather than confining me along the way. And I'm going to admit, listeners, I can be confined like the next guy. But in this case, I chose not to allow my loss to confine my sense of capacity.
I'm trying to imagine a world in which Tim Elmore had decided in college he wasn't a good speaker and wasn't going to do it anymore. It would have been a very different world.
Might have been.
Well, Tim, thank you so much for these thoughts so far. We've talked about defining and confining. We want to get to the third and healthy one, but before we get there, let's take a really quick break and then we'll come back. Growing up in a post-pandemic world means that many students today are facing new challenges and often don't have the social and emotional skills to handle it all. When students possess skills like self-awareness, impulse control, empathy, teamwork, and responsible decision-making, they're prepared to not only survive, but succeed inside and outside of the classroom.
Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning comes in both middle school and high school versions and presents a fun, image-based pedagogy designed to delight and challenge your students. Find out more about how you can get Habitudes for Social and Emotional Learning to your school by going to growingleaders.com/SEL.
All right, we are back. Tim, so far we have talked about how losses can define us. We've talked about how they can confine us. I have a sneaking suspicion that this third one is going to rhyme with those two words.
You are a smart man. Well, it helps me remember.
And yeah,
listeners,
me too.
I'm hoping it helps you. So response three is the one I recommend, and it's allowing your losses to refine you. So we're refined, like gold,
yeah,
you know, or whatever. So this one is the option I just believe we've got to learn to choose on a regular basis. It's healthy in that it assesses the loss that's happened. It's not denial, but it allows the loss to play a proper positive role in our growth. When we let losses and failures refine us, we avoid a state of denial and embrace a state of development. Okay? That's a key shift. We can genuinely say, I am a work in progress.
I love that.
As I review my setbacks, you know, like I said, car accidents, chronic disease, et cetera, I worked to make them like toll booths where I pay a price and keep moving forward rather than a roadblock where I just get stuck.
Yeah.
So the phrase, listeners, that we use around our office all the time is, we need to make sure the hurdles we face make us more agile than fragile.
Yes.
And today, we're very apt to become fragile from the hardships we face.
Yes.
So how do we enable losses to refine us? Good question. Let me just offer a couple of thoughts and we'll wrap up. I think it's three key decisions. At least for me, it's been. Number one, the first one is our attitude. We've got to remain optimistic and hopeful about our future, even in the midst of the loss. We've got to maintain a strong sense of identity along the way. The second decision is our accountability. I think we need to position people we admire next to us and hold us accountable to learn from and gain from our losses. People I admire are usually better than me, and I go, okay, that should be the standard, not my loss I just experienced. We must request that they ask us hard questions, those accountability partners. And then the third decision is our teachability. We got to embrace a growth mindset, not a fixed mindset. Every one of you listening have heard that term. Fixed mindset is where we go, well, I'm just not good at math, or, well, I'm just not good at this or that. Growth mindset says, I'm not good at that yet. So we've got to refuse to drift into a victim mentality by recognizing how we benefit from our losses and setbacks. And this enables us to turn that proverbial disadvantage into an advantage. Mm-hmm. I love what Winston Churchill said. He said, get ready, listeners. Winston Churchill in a gruff voice said, if you're going through hell, keep going. Don't stop. Don't stop where you don't want to be.
Yep.
So, and Robert Jordan, I love this phrase too. He framed it this way. The oak fought the wind and was broken. The willow bent when it must, and it survived.
I love that. I love that. I was wondering if you were going to bring this idea of growth mindset into the picture, because I think it's exactly what we're talking about, right?
Yeah, it is.
When those winds of adversity blow, how do we respond to them?
That's exactly
so
right.
You've been talking about things that apply to all of us. If you're an adult in your 60s listening to this, or a kid, you know, in your teens listening to this. But I wonder if you could connect the dots, and you even got, I think, a quote that you're going to share with us about how we as adults should think about this conversation when we're trying to lead the kids that we've got under us.
So 20 years ago in 2004, President George W. Bush was in office, and he spoke to educators in one of the events. And he made a statement that I wrote down and I have not forgotten. Listen to this. He said, when it comes to our children, we've been guilty of the soft bigotry of low expectations. Yeah. When it comes to our kids, we've been guilty of the soft bigotry of low expectations.
Mm.
So what would it look like if we helped the kids around us not be defined by a loss, not be confined, but be refined? And the best story I can think of to close this out is about a kid, a young child, who years ago in the 19th century handled this beautifully because I think his parents handled it beautifully. Louis grew up in France, And he was 3 years old, still a preschool age kid, when he went out to his dad's tool shed and he picked up one of those old fashioned awls. AWLS, it was a sharp figure. If you don't know what an awl is, it's a kind of a sharp, pointy metal piece that you can poke holes in leather and make a belt or whatever. Yeah. Well, he started playing with it, and Louis poked his eye out.
Mm.
And because infections were not handled quite as well as they are today, the infection went to the other eye, and he lost sight in both of his eyes.
Oh, wow.
So before he turned 5 years old, he couldn't see. Well, his parents could either say, oh, bless his heart, well, he just won't be able to do what other kids do. But they thought, nope, he will be disabled maybe a bit, but we're going to take him to a different school, a school for the blind. And we're going to have him learn to, you know, train, et cetera, learn to read, et cetera, et cetera. So they find this school that's miles and miles away, closer to Paris, actually. And it was a school for the blind. But when Louis gets there, he's in elementary school. He realizes that their system for reading was not very good.
Mm.
In fact, it was actually a system that was developed for seeing people to see in the dark. So it was kind of helpful.
Yeah.
But if you're blind, it's still not doing the job, you know.
Blind is not seeing in the dark.
That's
Those are
right.
two different things.
Yeah. So Louis, at 12 years old, so the equivalent of today's sixth grader, started working on his own system. Yeah. And by 15, Louis, catch his last name, listeners, Louis Braille had come up with a system of reading for the blind, one that is used all over the world today, developed by a freshman in high school, or the equivalent of a freshman in high school.
Amazing.
It's powerful. So the adults in his life would not let him see himself as a victim. You're just going to have to jump a few hurdles that we normal people didn't have to jump. But Andrew, here's my favorite part of the story. You already know it, but I'm going to say it anyway. The tool that Louis used to create this new system was an awl.
Mm.
The very tool that had blinded him, he ended up using to help him read and to help the world read today. So I'm thinking, that's a good way to handle a loss.
Pretty amazing.
Yeah, pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So
all brought on by this young man's ingenuity, of course, but also by the adults around him encouraging him and believing in what he was capable of.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I love that. I love that. I love that. I hope you listeners will be encouraged to talk to students about what defines them, what confines them, and what could refine them. I think it's a great exercise even to challenge a student to actually write out, okay, you're going through adversity right now. What would it look like to let this define you?
Yeah.
What would it look like to let this confine you? Yeah. And what would it look like to let this refine you? I think that's a great exercise I hope some people use. Well, Tim, thank you so much for sharing your wisdom with us today and really challenging us to think about how we handle losses in our lives and how we help students handle loss in their lives. Obviously, we've given you some practical ideas here today, but if you're looking for a tool that you can use that's really designed to have conversations about characteristics that we've talked about today, from emotional health to resilience, we've got a great tool called Habitudes. Habitudes are simply images that form leadership habits and attitudes, and we help students learn these skills, learn to practice these skills using images, pictures and stories and metaphors that create experiences that change their life. So if you want to find out more about that, go on over to growingleaders.com and you can find out more about Habitudes. Well, as always, if you would rate this podcast, give us 5 stars on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts, we would greatly appreciate it. If you found this episode helpful and thought of somebody you could share it with, we definitely want to encourage you to share that with others. If you want to connect with us online, we are at Growing Leaders and at Tim L. Moore pretty much everywhere you are. And then finally, if you have ideas for this podcast, shoot us an email. It's podcast@growingleaders.com. We love getting emails from you all. Well, Tim, thank you once again for leading us. Thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next time.